Welcome, everyone, from the far regions of the United Kingdom all the way to the long-stretching plains of the United States, where I reside. It's DDP. No, I'm joking. It's David J. McCutcheon. How's it going, everybody? I am on my own in this wilderness. No, I cannot tolerate it. I cannot tolerate this frozen tundra of hurt feelings since Kenny went on a magnificent journey with the one and only broken Matt Hardy throughout the UK. He's gallivanting right now, you guys. He is gallivanting across the United Kingdom with Matt Hardy and Maxwell Hardy and Rebby Sky. I'm so heartbroken by this that I had to go and recruit another member of the Inside the Ropes team to help me stave off this insufferable injustice that's been placed upon both me and her, really, if you think about it, having to stay here behind, not having adventures with Matt Hardy. I am, of course, talking about Sandra Ruth Wesseldyke Rhinestone.
You were so close to actually saying my correct proper name.
No, I wasn't. Shut up.
You got three of them. You got three of them.
No, I didn't.
You did.
I'm sitting here like pouting into my glass of water that I got that close to getting it right.
I know.
At the very end, I was like, shit, I'm going to actually say this for real. I need to throw this off. It was sort of like whenever someone is driving impaired, right? And then they see a police officer behind them.
It's like, oh shit, like, oh, better shit. Slow down and actually get in my lane.
I need to slow down and sort of correct everything. And then instead they just drive into a ditch. That was me. that was me on this. How are you doing, Sandra? You doing all right this evening?
I'm doing all right this evening. I had to work today, but you know, that's fine. It's very strange recording a podcast at a normal time for me where I don't have to rush off to work because I'm going to be getting out of work at like 5 a.m. the other person's time. This is actually pretty glorious. I got to come home from work. I got to eat. I got to, you know, recap a little bit of Raw, try and remember what happened because I actually have to talk about Raw. And I am not used to paying attention to Raw when I watch Raw.
Unfortunately, you have to cover the B show this week.
I do have to cover the B show. And it's fine because, David, I'm here for you.
We need each other in this time of loneliness.
It's true.
This vast, empty sorrow pit.
We're not gallivanting.
McIntosh.
There's no gallivanting for us. We're just...
No gallivanting.
You know
where I gallivanted today?
The doctor.
Yes, I did. I gallivanted to the doctor because I not only had one heart surgery, ladies and gentlemen, I had two. And you know what? I think I'm in need of a third one because Kenny broke my heart this week.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That's what they're going to have to go in there and sew my heart back together because it's broken. It's split.
Broken into all sorts of tiny pieces.
There is a huge crack in this heart. It looks a lot like my butt and a lot of...
I bet your surgeon's going to be pretty upset with Kenny undoing all of his good work.
No, he's going to fucking love him. He gets another $41,000 because I'm going to have a third heart surgery. And that's what they cost individually. $41,000, Sandra.
No, I don't doubt it. I used to work in healthcare. I know how expensive shit is.
Yes. Yeah, no. It's terrible. And it's all Kenny's fault. I think what's going to happen actually is like eventually he's just going to break my heart so many times I'm going to invent a time machine and go back and tell my younger self about all the times that Kenny has broken my heart. And that's what actually causes all of this to happen. Some Terminator shit. That's what happened. But alas, we digress. We're here to talk about Monday Night Raw. This is the Raw Rundown. This is where we recap the events of Monday Night Raw. It is me, At ZoopSoul on Twitter, ZOOPSOUL. Where can they find you on the Twitters? We're getting our plugs in early this week.
I was going to say, this is a different format to what we do on the SmackDown Summary. I'm at Sandra Ruth RW on Twitter, which we'll probably say again at the end, because
we will.
Because it'll feel weird not to.
Here's the thing. We're going to get this stuff in twice, because it's like whenever your parents go out of town and you just eat ice cream for breakfast and then you have dessert later after dinner.
I mean, to be fair, that's like my adulthood.
Yes, it was my adulthood as well until a month ago. So Sandra, just note where this can lead.
Anywhere we want it to, baby.
Anywhere. The parents are out of town. We're playing some Bob Seger. You're a Michigan gal. You're a Michigander. Just take those old records out. We are sliding through the wood floors on our socks, and we are doing it Tom Cruise style this week, because the parents are away and the kids will play.
Yes.
Here at Inside Ropes. About time. You know who else was playing quite jovially this week?
Who?
Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens on the highlight reel.
And the one, the only, the greatest man who ever lived. I'm sorry, Austin Aries. Take a back seat for a moment, because Chris Jericho is a national treasure. These guys came out for the highlight reel to open up Monday Night Raw this week. It was just absolutely tremendous. They went on about their Thanksgiving and how they spent it not celebrating because they are both Canadians.
And because they already celebrated Canadian Thanksgiving, because they're way ahead of us Americans. Boo.
Way ahead of the curve. This was just a wonderful segment. And then they were, Jericho said that he was thankful for Seth Rollins, which Kevin Owens, of course, did an about face and was like, wait, what? He looked so betrayed. He was like, what are you talking about? Why are you thankful for him? And he goes, no, I'm thankful for Seth Rollins, because he allowed me to see what happens whenever pride takes over your life. And I was like, oh, you're a wonderful treasure, Chris Jericho. But of course, not all was fun and games with Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens this week. Because Roman Reigns had to come out and cut one of the most awkward, embarrassing promos that I've heard him cut in a while, which is a little surprising. He was, you know, his stuff with Rusev kind of put me back into good graces with Roman Reigns. However, this was a little misstep, I think. But then, of course, Kevin Owens started tripping up over his words, which was a little awkward. But, of course, once again, salvaged by the wonderfulness that is Chris Jericho.
See, that's the thing. Roman Reigns mocking Kevin Owens for misspeaking, doesn't that just seem a little, like...
Pot to kettle, you are black.
Exactly. Because Kevin Owens, you know, steps over his words or whatever, and Roman goes, I was like, you're such a dick. English is his second language. And then it was funny, because immediately after that, Chris Jericho goes, you know what? You're still so smart, because English is your second language. They don't realize that.
It was just absolutely wonderful.
It's actually, like, if you look at Kevin Owens salvaging him misspeaking and stepping over his words, which I do all the time, constantly, right? Kevin Owens knows how to salvage this. Roman Reigns does not. A lesson in promos.
It really was, because Kevin Owens immediately poked fun at himself with it, as to where Roman Reigns constantly looks like a deer in headlights whenever he does it on the live televisions. But Reigns, the reason that he even went out there to begin with, he was challenging Kevin Owens in the main event, and he wanted that title shot. If he was going to beat Kevin Owens, he would get that title shot at the pay-per-view. And it seems that Kevin Owens, in the process of getting riled up by Roman Reigns, he hurt the feelings of his best friend.
Well, he told him to shut up.
Told him to shut up.
Chris Jericho was about to put Roman Reigns on the list for interrupting and for hating friendship, right? Like, Roman Reigns, what I've learned about Roman Reigns as a character is that Roman Reigns hates love. Because he wants to interrupt Alexander Rusev's and Lana's happy wedding bliss, their celebration. He wants to get in the middle of their marriage, right? That's not a very cool thing to do, in my opinion, as a married woman. You're a married man. Would you want someone like Roman Reigns showing up to your house and saying, like, hey, Val, David's a moron, and you're a slut, and No, I don't think you would appreciate that at all.
No, I wouldn't appreciate people Kenny showing up to my house. Kenny does that every week.
And you don't appreciate it.
I don't appreciate it. No.
Not at all.
It hurts my feelings. It hurts my feelings.
Again with the heartbreak. Again with the more surgeries. Yes. Seriously now.
A fourth
Seriously.
One is coming. I can feel it.
A fourth one is coming? You haven't even had your third.
I can feel it. It's like earthquakes. The third one will be the tremor. And then the gigantic earth-shattering heartbreak will be the fourth one. I can feel it.
You're having a premonition.
I'm having a premonition.
But not only does Roman Reigns hate love, as we've learned, he apparently also hates friendship. Because he wants to get in the middle of Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho and get between these two best friends who are super solid, right? Like, Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens, best friends forever, right? Yeah, yes. No, not okay with Roman Reigns, hater of everything good. And then, so as soon as Jericho is about to put Roman on the list, Kevin Owens has finally had enough. He's fed up with Roman Reigns. And Kevin Owens has expressed some displeasure with the list in the past, right? Like, he feels that the list overshadows him some, which I feel is a bit fair as the Universal Champion. Like, he wants to focus on his title and on his title matches, and he wants to win, and he wants to stay the champion, and he takes all of this very seriously. And it's not that he doesn't care for Chris. It's just Chris is that friend who's a little obsessed with something, and you're kind of like, I love you, but, like, this thing that you're really obsessed with is kind of an issue, and you're just stepping into, you know, my business, and it's not really good. And Kevin Owens has just had enough, right? And so he tells Chris Jericho to shut up. And then Roman Reigns finds this hilarious because he's like, they might hate each other. I hate friendship. And
well, he only hates friendship because A, no one is his friend. And the reason he hates love is B, no one loves him.
It's true. It's true. Well, Roman Reigns, this is not a new characteristic. And this is a little bit of a tangent. But remember when the Shield broke up? And remember how Seth Rollins, like, hit Roman Reigns in the back of the chair and Dean Ambrose was aghast and all of that? Like, I understand why Roman Reigns would have problems with Seth Rollins, but why did he leave Dean Ambrose? He just left Dean Ambrose to fend for himself, right? He was like, no, one versus all. Meh. No, that makes you a dick. And Roman Reigns is still a dick. And so he's laughing at Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho having a little bit of a spat. And he's like, because he was saying basically that, you know, Kevin Owens, you need Chris Jericho. You need Chris Jericho to help you. And Kevin Owens said, I don't need Chris Jericho. And he puts his microphone down. And at this point, I was going, please, 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 please just say, but I want Chris Jericho in my life. That's what I was waiting for. Because last week when they did the swerve and they were like, you know, we know who's to blame. And I was like, blame it on someone else, blame it on someone else. And then they blamed it on Roman Reigns and it was glorious. I wanted a moment like that so badly. And we didn't get it. And my heart nearly broke.
You know who else's heart broke? Chris Jericho's, because he looked like a scalded puppy.
He did.
And I felt so bad. I wanted to give him a big hug and a big kiss and tell him, Chris, it's all going to be okay. But as things would transpire later, things would not be okay for Chris Jericho.
Things would not be okay. He was still very upset.
Very upset. But we'll get more into that later. This set up the main event of Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens. If Roman Reigns wins, he gets the title shot at the pay-per-view. But here's the thing that bothered me is they never even mentioned that the United States champion, Roman Reigns, would be facing the Universal champion in a title, or not a title versus title, a champion versus champion segment.
Not once did they mention it. I mean, granted, look at the way Roman did remember to take his belt out to the ring this time. So that's was progress.
I guess I have to carry this heavy prop. Bleh.
I mean, he always just like, and this didn't really occur to me until some people pointed it out to me on Twitter, but the way he just slings it over his shoulder like a backpack or something, he gives zero fucks about that belt.
Zero fucks were given on this day. Once they got back from the commercial break, we had Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens arguing backstage. This just furthered the segment along. Mick Foley walked up and basically summed up, hey, that match is official tonight. And Jericho said, hey, you don't have to worry about me interfering in the match. because I'm not going to. Oh, this was just gutting.
And he walks off because he's just not going to. And this was the first time Mick Foley came to insert his nose into everybody's business tonight. More of that later. But Chris Jericho just looked so heartbroken, and he was actually going to leave and not come back and not interfere and not do anything because he has had his feelings hurt a lot. Like, you don't mess with the list like that. Oh, before I forget, can we just give a great shout out to Chris Jericho for his line where he said that it wasn't Chris Jericho in a Sin Cara mask last week? It was Sin Cara in a Chris Jericho mask.
My wife predicted that he was going to say that line and said it along with him. And I smiled ear to ear. Anytime just off the cuff that your beloved, your betrothed is sitting there predicting what Chris Jericho is going to say on television, immediately you go, good decisions were made in my life.
Yep.
I'm pretty happy. You know who is not going to be very happy? Kenny, whenever he finds out that the Golden Truth essentially took on Braun Strowman in the first match of the night. It was R-Truth versus Braun Strowman. This was a total squash. Braun Strowman destroyed R-Truth. Goldust came in after the match to check on R-Truth. Got a preemptive strike on Braun Strowman because, let's face it, Braun Strowman was going to attack Goldust.
Of course.
Strowman laid him out. But out comes Sami Zayn out from the back to make a heroic stop here. This was an interesting segment. Of course, Braun Strowman completely laid waste to Sami Zayn again. Mick Foley comes out. I'm sure you'll have some things to say about this.
And, oh boy, do I.
And interjects himself into this scenario, basically attempting to save Sami Zayn from himself. Once cooler heads prevail, Sami Zayn begins sounding off on Mick Foley, telling him that he is a hypocrite for trying to stop Sami Zayn from doing the very thing that Mick Foley became famous for. And this is an interesting segment. I like the way that these two are playing off of each other. Mick does come off as a hypocrite because this is the type of thing that Mick Foley did in his career that Sami Zayn is trying to do now. I kind of like the dynamic a bit. I'm interested to see where it goes, but I am attempting to guide myself through these swamp infested rivers with a little bit of trepidation here. I love me some Sami Zayn. You love you some Sami Zayn. We may be the two biggest Sami Zayn fans on the planet, right?
Yeah, that would not surprise me whatsoever. I think between you and me, there is so much love for Sami Zayn going on.
Way too much. We are bursting at the seams. Like, my heart is with sadness every time that Kenny tweets out how much fun he's having with his new best friend, Matt Hardy. But I digress. We're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Raw. Let me say that to play a guy who was under a luchador mask for a decade, Sami Zayn knocked it out of the park with this promo. Real emotion coming from him. I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for the amount of emotion and meaningful words that he puts into all of his promos. He always talks like he has a fire lit underneath him. And that's just so strange for somebody who did, you know, who's fucking promo for a decade was El Generico numero uno.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about this. I'm passing you the basketball. Put in a slam dunk or whatever they do. I'm not good with basketball analogies. I apologize. But since this is an American podcast this week, I felt that we needed more American sports. So there you go.
Oh,
Simon.
Boy, then I am not going to be helpful whatsoever because American sports, at least not real ones, those are just not my forte at all. But
shoot that slam dunk of a three-pointer.
Yeah, sure. go sports. But it's so strange because if you would have told me even 2 months ago that the thing I would be one of the things that I would be most into on Raw would be something involving Braun Strowman. I would have said, no, you're confusing me with someone who needs a brain operation to reverse madness or something. I don't know where that's going. I don't know, whatever. I'm getting all confused because I really like Braun Strowman.
I was going to ask you, me and Kenny have come to the opinion that we really like Braun Strowman.
I really like Braun Strowman.
You're in the same camp as we are then. You are also, it's sort of like a sexual confusion, right? Like you see a really good looking person of the same sex. And even though you're pretty heterosexual, you go, damn, though. It's sort of like that. That is the same exact kind of confusion I have with Braun Strowman. I'm looking at him, I'm like, my brain tells me I shouldn't like the way this guy wrestles, and I don't, but there's something about him that makes me want to like him as a wrestler.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it at all.
And I don't know if it's
the type of wrestling I'm used to.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's because my mind has been opened up to this whole new world where I'm absolutely in love with Psycho Sid, right?
So, oh, Lord mercy.
Like, he's one of my very favorite things at the moment on Retro Raw. And, I mean, Braun Strowman is nowhere near in the league of Psycho Sid. Nowhere near in the league of Psycho Sid. I want to make that clear.
No one has ever said that in the history of podcasting, you guys.
Kenny will agree with me, okay?
Oh, Kenny will agree with me. Psycho Sid is literally like a top five least favorite wrestler of all time for me.
Really?
We are on the opposite spectrum for Psycho Sid.
Oh, he's
so I'm happy
shit,
that Braun Strowman
so
of all fucking people has brought us together here, son.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But there's something about Braun Strowman and the way they're presenting him is so smart. I really feel like Braun Strowman is an example of accentuate someone's strengths and hide that person's weaknesses. And that's how you should present a wrestler, right? Like,
it's to a T, textbook.
Don't make Braun Strowman go out there and do a 20-minute attempted classic match. It's not going to happen, guys. Like, that's not what Braun Strowman is good at. You know what Braun Strowman is good at? Smushing people and looking big and going, rawr! And it's really good. And I'm so into the dynamic of Braun Strowman versus Sami Zayn. I think you and I talked about it. I don't know, was that when we were with Robert when we were talking about it? Or there was some point where you and I were on a podcast together and we were talking about Braun Strowman versus Sami Zayn right when this whole situation was starting. And we were kind of like, I have some trepidation about it. I don't want Sami Zayn to just come off looking like a jobber to Braun Strowman. I want this to be used to build both of them, right? And that's what both of us wanted. And
absolutely,
I really feel like this is doing that because just like we said back then, what we hoped would happen is that Sami Zayn looks so valiant and so outmatched, so outsized. So, you know, Braun is huge and big and he smushes people and he's scary and he's a big old monster, right? Like the only way they got him out of Survivor Series was little James Ellsworth holding onto his foot. And like, I just feel like that's perfect because it makes Sami Zayn look like this great underdog. And I mean, they'll call him Underdog from the Underground, so it sounds so overused. But Sami Zayn is best when he really looks like a true underdog. Like, he couldn't possibly win, but look how much heart he has, and maybe he'll pull something off. It's kind of the same dynamic he had when Kevin Owens was just beating him to death, and all of their matches ended via ref stoppage. Kevin Owens didn't pin Sami Zayn for a really long time, and people don't realize that. All of their matches ended, like when Kevin Owens won the championship and all of that, it was always via ref stoppage because Sami Zayn wouldn't give up and he wouldn't get pinned and he kept rolling his shoulder up like on instinct, right? Because he has that damn much heart and he is that awesome of a guy and he just won't quit. The refs have had to save Sami from himself. Now, this sounds familiar, right? Because Mick Foley comes out and says that he needs to save Sami from himself. My problem with this in this instance is that there was no reason for Mick Foley to come out right then. And I, you know, cards on the table, I didn't watch all of Raw last week. So I didn't see the first beatdown with Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman. Was it, like, super harsh? Was Sami dying?
Very harsh.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was difficult to watch even knowing that he wasn't actually getting hurt.
Because that is Sami Zayn's greatest strength. Is selling and making you feel like he is dead. Even when you know he is not dead, he makes it look like he is dead. And it breaks my heart every single time I see it, and I always want to cry, and I actually, like, inadvertently, just now, as we're talking about it, I have clasped my hands over my heart because this is my love for Sami Zayn, right? Like, yes. I get very, very passionate when I talk about Sami Zayn. He's just my favorite. But what's made me annoyed about this is that Braun Strowman hit Sami with, like, three moves or something here, and Sami was just upside down in the tree of woe. It wasn't like he was dead. It wasn't like there was much of anything going on. And Mick Foley's just like, no, stop it. Stop it, you guys. Not okay. Sami could have come back. Like, he was fine.
What happened last week? Oh, my God. What happened last week compared to this week? Night and day difference.
Because I assume, like, last week was more like when Kevin Owens was beating him and he was dead, right? Like, Braun Strowman was beating that, him and he was dead.
Yeah, it was even worse than that, I think. See, it was because of the size differential. You know?
Right, yeah, exactly. Which is, again, playing to Braun Strowman's strengths. He should absolutely look dominant, and he should absolutely be able to beat Sami Zayn, especially because I did see the clips of it. And Braun Strowman attacking Sami Zayn from behind right to start out meant that Sami didn't have a chance to start out with.
Right.
Here, Sami was starting on even keel. Sami came out to attack Braun. Sami knew exactly what he was doing. And why would Mick Foley want to interfere in that and get in the middle of it when Sami was fine? Like, he was fine enough to stand up and tell Mick off, and I was so glad he told Mick off, because Mick absolutely deserved that. Mick is turning into Stephanie McMahon. Mick is turning into Triple H. I do not like Mick Foley right now, and I know that he's your close personal friend who follows you on Twitter and all of that, and I love Mick Foley too, right? Like, I want to love Mick Foley. I've met him. Nice guy. Nicest guy in the world. He's so sweet.
The biggest sweetheart.
I think it was Annie Hayes on Twitter said, is it worse having this Mick Foley, or would it be worse to just bring Triple H back? Like, which is worse, basically? I don't have the tweet in front of me, so I apologize if I'm misquoting you or something. But I said...
It's a good argument, though, to bring
it is,
up,
and I said, I would rather have Triple H back than this Mick Foley in these instances, because what we're getting here is someone who's acting like the worst authority type tropes, right? Like, getting involved in everything and, like, punishing the wrestlers for no reason and making no sense and making decisions that don't make any sense. But I really want to like Mick Foley. I don't want to dislike him. I'm fine disliking Triple H. That doesn't bother me.
Right. That's the thing, is it's worse because it is souring you on a character whom you love.
Yeah. And I mean, if Mick Foley actually turns proper heel, that will be one thing. But Mick Foley feels like a heel right now. He doesn't feel like a babyface at all to me.
He absolutely does. No, and it is something that we're going to have to watch with careful consideration over the next month, I would say, to see exactly where this goes and if it gets any worse than it does, or if they parlay it into a meaningful story, perhaps with Sami here.
Yeah.
Who knows? Possibly. Also, I just want to say I do have bronchitis right now. I am incredibly sorry if I am coughing into the microphone, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, my body is trying to kill me. I'm trying to stay alive with my love for Sami Zayn and for all of you.
I mean, you know my rule about co-host dying.
It's true. That's the thing, is I don't want to die because Sandra will reanimate me and kill me again.
I will. I'll be like,
It's much nicer to die of your own volition than to have someone murder you. So I'm doing my best to stay alive here, guys. The next segment, Charlotte was in the backstage. Dana Brooke was prepping her homecoming / celebration party for the match later on, not too far from now, between Sasha and Charlotte for the women's championship in Charlotte, North Carolina, of course, obviously. And it would have to be, right? Charlotte basically cuts your typical heel promo here, says that she's looking to bring meaning to the lives of all the people who have meaningless lives to begin with there in Charlotte. She sends Dana away to do a little bit more prepping and everything.
I think my favorite thing was that she said she would be the only hero to come from this place. The only one.
Yes, the only one. The sole hero of this area. But we will get more into Charlotte and Sasha in just momentarily. Next up, though, we had a segment between Cedric Alexander and Tony Nese, two very fine workers. Somebody wanted to know if we were going to do a 205 Live show, and to which our answer was, fuck no. Why, no. Why the fuck would we do that? No,
not
no,
happening.
Never, never. And beyond that, we love bitching and complaining on these things, right? Like, if we reviewed those shows, the 205 Lives, it would just be, oh, yeah, they had a very nice match. It was very wonderful. They showed some good spots. They showed some good chemistry. And the proper man won. Next. No one wants to listen to that. People want to hear us complain and belabor all of our stupid musings that we have on the world of professional wrestling, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, to be fair, I really like talking about good wrestling that I like, too. But also, if I commit to do a 205 Live show, that means I have to watch 205 Live every week. And at this point, right, there is so much wrestling in my life. And that is not in addition, or I mean, that's on top of actually like working for a living.
Right, right. And I mean, like, where do people, like, if you just kept up with WWE alone on a weekly basis, where do people find the time to watch anything else? How do people watch The Walking Dead or any other very popular television show in addition to everything that we have to watch for wrestling from WWE alone, not even including stuff like Chikara or New Japan or ROH or TNA even?
It's true.
My goodness.
It's true.
My
there
goodness.
Is just so much wrestling. And I do plan to watch 205 Live this week especially. And I'm really hoping that we do get some story and whatnot. But I don't want to commit to it. Kenny and I may talk about it a little on SmackDown, maybe.
Right. Right.
Because it airs right after that. But I'm not going to
promise. And also, Kenny and I may discuss it a tad bit here on the Raw Rundown.
Yeah.
Since it is our division, I don't really think Raw deserves it. But alas, I don't think Raw deserves that third hour either. Tony Nese got the win here. A solid matchup, I thought. He won off a distraction from Drew Gulak. Alicia Fox was watching on a backstage monitor. I think they're kind of doing a romance angle between her and Cedric Alexander, maybe something brewing up there. Could be interesting. I don't know. At least it gives some kind of a story, you know?
Yeah, so that's what I said. Some people asked me how I felt about Alicia Fox potentially being in love with Cedric Alexander. And honestly, I'm glad for Alicia Fox to get something to do on TV. I hope that it gives her a role and she can actually, you know, do stuff. Because Alicia Fox, I like Alicia Fox. I think she's really talented.
I think she's really talented. She's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. As a red-blooded male, I would put her in the upper echelon of all of the female Raw roster.
No, I think she's absolutely gorgeous. And that's been one of my criticisms of the Raw Women's Division is that it focuses on a very select few people and the rest of them are just nowhere. Right? Like,
yeah,
they just not exist. And so I'm glad that they're integrating Alicia Fox into the Cruiserweight division. It helps bring the Cruiserweight division into the show a little bit more, too.
Yes, absolutely, no doubt.
Like, because at first, I kind of liked that they did the purple ropes and the purple lighting and everything for the Cruiserweight division. I thought it was kind of cool. It set it apart. It meant like, oh, something exciting is coming. And unfortunately, something exciting hasn't really been coming when the purple ropes come out. So yeah, it just kind of feels like a separate thing that says, like, I guess I've kind of come over to the side that a lot of people had where they say the purple ropes just kind of indicate you don't have to care now or,
yep,
you know, like it's not a part of Raw. It's completely separate and you can zone out. And unfortunately with these Cruiserweight matches, even though they're very good, they are very good. And as I'm watching them, I'm like, this is very good wrestling. I completely zone out and I have a very difficult time paying attention if it's not someone that I'm personally invested in as a wrestler. Like, Noam Dar is in the next Cruiserweight match, and because I love Noam Dar, I'm like, oh, I want to see Noam Dar wrestle, but I don't want to see it because it's a Cruiserweight match.
Right, and that is the unfortunate conundrum that they're going to have to salvage. Filming 205 Live right after SmackDown, I think they're going to have some mostly empty houses, if you want my all honest opinion. I don't think that a lot of people are going to be sticking around on a Tuesday night, which is a school night and a work night for many people. I don't think a lot of people are going to be sticking around for that to watch it. So we'll see how it goes.
That they do something compelling and that people do stay. I mean, I know for me personally, when I go and see SmackDown, because I've only seen Raw Life once, because it's only been in Grand Rapids once in the time that I've been watching wrestling, and it hadn't been in Grand Rapids like for 5 years before that. We don't get a lot of wrestling here, right?
Right, right.
We tend to get the go home SmackDown to things. And when I've gone to see SmackDown, I'm always ready to see more because I'm like, yeah, I'm here at a wrestling show and it's wrestling and yay.
The thing is, though, is like you pay so much money to get in, you might as well stick around and get your money's worth.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I'm used to being awake at that time, but for all the kids that are there, I totally understand it. It might, I don't know if it will help that they're not filming Main Event anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping, is that it kind of cuts away from that. That way they don't have to worry about it so much.
Yeah, because that's something to mention, is that they canceled Superstars on the network. And I guess they're filming Main Event before Raw now. And so the time, because they'd been filming some Main Event matches after SmackDown instead of before SmackDown as of late.
Right.
And now instead of filming Main Event after SmackDown, they're going to be filming 205 Live. So kind of a shakeup in the viewing schedule.
I hope it is a positive change. You know what wasn't very positive though, Sandra?
What?
Another segment of Chris Jericho being sad backstage. Chris Jericho says that if Kevin Owens doesn't need him, then he doesn't need Kevin Owens either. And he gets all pissed off, runs amok backstage, goes to his limo. He was in total shambles when out of nowhere, the world's shittiest babyface, Seth Rollins, appears.
Okay, come on. Is he a shittier babyface than Roman Reigns?
Well, here's the thing is Roman Reigns is the world's shittiest performer. As to where Seth Rollins, world's shittiest babyface. Yeah, Seth Rollins could play being a heel just fine. As to where Roman Reigns, regardless, Seth Rollins lays out Chris Jericho here, gives him a pedigree on the roof of the car. This was just carnage. It broke my heart. I didn't want to see it. Seth Rollins doing his worst job of being a babyface ever, taking someone that we all love, like Chris Jericho, even if he cost him that match in the Sin Cara mask, still, people didn't want to see it. People wanted to see Chris Jericho happy. They didn't want to see him beat up and heartbroken. Just terrible.
It was kind of funny. At first I thought, because I, like, as I'm watching Raw, you know, I do have my phone out, and I'm on Twitter some and whatnot, because I'm actually watching it live. And so I have a tendency to kind of like look down and look around and look away. And also I'm just not that used to paying attention to Raw. I thought Seth Rollins came out of the car and I was like, right. Ooh, has he been taking lessons from, remember when Dean Ambrose used to attack Seth Rollins all the time and come out of car trunks and man-sized presence and
All types of shenanigans.
Yeah, so I was like, I wonder if Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose have been actually having secret chats now that they're good guys again, and now that they, you know, had their little reunion at Survivor Series and did their powerbomb, and now they're sort of maybe exchanging some hesitant text messages like, hey, how you doing? So if you were going to text
someone,
they're not
sure
in
dick pics. I know that much. Well, oh, goodness gracious.
You know. But I can just see them being like, So, Dean, if you were going to attack someone like Chris Jericho in a parking lot or something, like, what would you do? And then Dean Ambrose hesitantly not wanting to help out Seth Rollins, but also kind of wanting to help out Seth Rollins after their newfound connection, being like, well, I would hide in his car.
Hiding in a car has always worked out for Dean Ambrose, ladies.
It has. But Seth Rollins didn't come out of the car. He just appeared out of nowhere. But still, I like to imagine that these text messages are taking place and that, you know, there's some maybe rekindling of friendship behind the scenes. Although, goodness knows, Roman Reigns, hater of friendship. I don't know if we're going to get that Shield reunion. He hates friendship
much. He hates friendship so much, guys. I don't think he's going to be able to handle it. Next up, though, we had Sasha Banks and Charlotte for the women's title. This ended in some shenanigans here,
There were
Sandra.
shenan- Well, I mean, not entirely shenanigans.
Well, it was a little shenanigody whenever it comes to Charlotte. She ended up getting a double count out, and
So
she was
intentionally.
pleased to the dickens by it, ladies and germs. Let me tell you, Charlotte was overly happy about the decision, getting the cheap out from her title defense. Mick Foley came out though and said that he was not going to allow this wonderful rivalry to end like this. And which begs the question, is this actually the end to this rivalry? He said that they would be booking this match later again to restart it as a falls count anywhere, no DQ match, right here in Charlotte, North Carolina, of course, Mick Foley style. This had a little bit of a deadly premonition to it, Sandra, given the fact that it was in Charlotte, and Charlotte is, of course, from Charlotte.
She is.
And the WWE doesn't tend to book people to go over in their hometowns very often, do they?
No, I think it was Dre Warner on Twitter who said, if you ever sign with WWE, make sure you list your hometown as parts unknown.
Yes,
Just in
and
case.
it is a wonderful it is a wonderful bit of advice, I know that much. Next up
Oh, I
though,
have thoughts on this. Can I tell you my
sure.
thoughts?
Yes, however, we should probably sum up all of our Charlotte and Sasha thoughts. If this pertains to Mick Foley, though,
It
go ahead.
pertains to Mick Foley.
Otherwise, though, we will save the thoughts for later in the main event.
Oh, no, this is very specifically about this specific moment and this specific decision.
Sure.
Okay. So, I was very salty after this. Very, very salty after this. Because, as the SmackDown homegirl, what pay-per-view is coming up on Sunday?
That would be the TLC, tables, ladders, and chairs, and thank God it doesn't also pertain to stairs as well.
It's true, although I do have a fondness in my heart for that really, really shitty stairs match, but I digress.
Yes.
Just because it was, oh, bless. But
Just the worst.
bless Eric Rowan and the Big Show. It was not as bad as Ryback and Kane in a chairs match that night. I will go on record and say that. But I do have a problem with Mick Foley coming out at this particular moment and coming out, and he even does mention SmackDown. So this was so intentional. So intentional, right? You know, I can't let this rivalry end here in this way. We're gonna have to restart it. Does Mick Foley restart it right then? No, he doesn't. So if you're gonna wait to restart this feud or wait to restart this, couldn't you have just as easily made this no DQ, no count out, falls count anywhere match for next week on Raw?
You would think, however, at the behest of giving the crowd what they want as a babyface general manager, the crowd that
I don't think
night.
you're talking about Mick Foley.
Well, that is the role he's supposed to be playing.
Supposed to be
So,
playing.
right. So under that guise, you could understand why he would want to restart a match, though.
I understand why he would want to restart a match. I do. My problem with this is that it's just such a dick move on Raw's part because Nikki Bella and Carmella are having a no DQ match at TLC. I've been looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to them getting a chance to shine. I've been looking forward to them getting a chance to have the first match of this type in ages, right? Like Sasha and Charlotte had a Hell in a Cell match, which is a very specific stipulation, but I was really looking forward to seeing what Nikki Bella and Carmella would do with weapons and going outside the ring and all of that kind of thing. And I really, really, really wanted those two women to have that spotlight because Charlotte and Sasha have the spotlight all the time. Like, according
All
to
the time.
Raw, the women's revolution is basically Stephanie McMahon, Charlotte, and Sasha. And
Yeah,
that's
more
where it
or less.
ends. And, like, I don't want it to sound like I'm complaining about Charlotte and Sasha having a no DQ match. I mean, Michael Farah and I were talking about this on Twitter just last week. We were saying we really hope that this becomes the norm, right? Like when Carmella versus Nikki Bella in a no DQ match was mentioned and was brought up and that it was going to be happening, we're like, this is the first time in ages. And I talked about this with Kenny on the last SmackDown summary too. Like, how has this stipulation evaded an entire division for years upon years? When it happens all the time in the men's division, it happens all the time in the tag team division. Why wouldn't it happen in women's matches when there's an intentional countout? Why wouldn't you have a no countout match? I really, really appreciate the logic and making this the norm and making women's main events the norm. But I was super, super salty about Raw having to upstage the SmackDown women in this way.
That is your prerogative. And I think that it would have been better if they would have restarted the match without the stipulation. However, it did lead to an amazing finish, and we will get into that a little bit later.
Oh, it did. And that's why I wanted to mention this now,
right?
Separate from the match.
Of course. Absolutely. Next up, though, we had a segment continuing from last week with Enzo Amore and Rusev. I enjoy these two together, though it does beg the question, if Enzo is going around and showing his dingle to a man's wife, how is he necessarily the baby face?
Don't understand it at all. I mean, to be fair, he was locked out, but he was pretty much like, hey, everybody, look at my dick.
He was very much flaunting it, and then he came out this week and said that he wanted to stuff Lana's turkey, or paraphrasing.
No, he said that Lana spent all of Thanksgiving thinking about a certified G stuffing her turkey.
Automatically, that's off the limits, guys. Come on, you don't go and do that. Enzo deserved to be roughed up a little bit, and he very much was. He ended up winning the match via DQ. This was a fun little segment, but again, I don't really understand why Rusev is the bad guy.
I have never been more happy to see Enzo Amore kicked in the dick.
Yeah. A complete dick move and deserving of that dick kick, if I do say so myself.
Can I? I might have a controversial opinion. I don't like Enzo and Cass anymore.
Ooh, that is a little bit of a controversial opinion.
Because they do is make gay jokes and misogynistic jokes about women and, like, calling Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens Bert and Ernie and being like, ha ha ha, you're gay together. That's not funny to me. That is not my humor. It's just, it doesn't make me laugh. The thing is, I really loved Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, and I could love them again, but it really depends on the story that they're in, and it really depends on the people that they surround themselves with. And when Enzo and Cass are having promo battles based on clever wordplay that's actually interesting and cool and not just listing Thanksgiving foods and also your wife wants to fuck me.
Yeah.
It
just
really, like, it turns me off to them so completely because it's just not the type of things I like seeing said to women. And also, like, why can't Lana speak in these segments? Lana was brought in to speak for Alexander Rusev, and now she's just this coy, like, demure damsel or something who is in peril because she was next to a penis once.
It kind of sucks too, because of the fact that Lana is so good on the mic, but at the other end of that is that Rusev is getting more mic time, which is never a bad thing.
Oh, no, he's fantastic.
And so that is the good thing, because, you know, the reason that she was brought in to begin with was to provide to be the voice of the monster. But now it turns out the monster can talk, and he's really fucking good at it.
Yeah, he is.
That's one way of looking at it. And there are pros and cons to it. I would like to see, or should I say here, Lana talk a little bit more. I think it would be a lot better. She's an excellent character, but maybe cut somebody else's mic time and give them both the opportunity to speak. I'll tell you whose mic time they could actually cut. How about Titus O'Neil?
Yeah, what even?
Yeah. This thing, they had this segment where Titus O'Neil shows up. He's very angry at Mark Henry for getting a movie gig where Mark Henry jobs in some movie I love that Mark Henry is a jobber even in the movie now.
Yeah.
Like he plays like a henchman that gets his ass beat in a B movie from WWE Films. Like, oh boy, poor Mark Henry, from World's Strongest Man to B movie jobber. Up next, though, we had Rich Swann versus Noam Dar, two of the stellar highlights of the cruiserweight division. With both Rich Swann, excellent music. Cider, how do you feel about Rich Swann's music? Are you as in love with it as Kenny as I are with this?
I mean, I'm in love with it. I don't know if I love it quite to the degree that you guys do.
So you would say on a level of 1 to 10, your ability to handle this is about a 8.
Potentially, I will say that I'll put No Way Jose above Rich Swann in the music department.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Personal preference there.
I enjoy a little bit of both of them. And I
them
hope
as a
that...
tag team, though. Like, and this is when I really fell in love with Rich Swann, was the team of No Way You Can Handle This.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. And it just rolls off the tongue, too. It's just absolutely amazing.
And having Rich Swann come out to dance, and then having No Way Jose come out to No Way Jose and dance, and both of them dancing together. And it was just such a delight. Such a delight. I would love to actually see them be a tag team for a while.
Speaking of things that are a delight, Brian Kendrick on commentary for this match.
So good.
Just completely lambasted Byron Saxton, telling him he didn't have the constitution to gut it out and become a champion like Brian Kendrick did. I love Brian Kendrick so much. I love Noam Dar so much. I love Rich Swann so much. I love everything about this so much. Swann ended up getting the win with an amazing kick that he just hit out of nowhere on Noam Dar. Looked amazing, crisp, wonderful. Loved this finish. It was my second favorite finish of the night. Swann gets on the mic afterwards and in more or less of a fashion tells Brian Kendrick that he will beat him for the Cruiserweight title on 205 Live and that he, in fact, cannot handle this.
It was so good. Everything about this was good. This was the most invested I've been in a Cruiserweight segment in a while. And it's just not the division that I'm paying the most attention to, but I am pretty into Rich Swann versus the Brian Kendrick way more than I was into TJ Perkins versus the Brian Kendrick. And it's weird because, you know, we talk about the Cruiserweight Classic. I love TJ Perkins in the Cruiserweight Classic. I don't think they did him any favors on Raw. I think they're doing Rich Swann more favors on Raw. I wish that he would get to be more than Dancing Black Guy.
Yeah.
Because I wish that they would actually...
I think that comes with time, though, and it also comes with opportunity. If they give him the mic, he will easily win people over.
And I'm sure he will. I think it's unfortunate that Rich Swann's backstory has been most effectively told on Talking Smack so far.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a excellent point. Talking Smack, by the way, if you don't watch it, make room for it.
Absolutely.
Something else that people need to make room for. Whenever Cesaro and Sheamus get together in a bar.
This is my
guys,
favorite segment of the week.
This is my favorite segment of Monday Night Raw as well. These two get together and they go, man, I just can't stand you. Yeah, well, I can't stand you either. And they're sitting there getting drunk, knowing that their last time that they ever teamed together is in the rearview mirror. It's no longer an obligation. They nearly won those titles, but they just couldn't do it due to the outside distraction, the interference, as it were. Just a sad time for these guys, but they're celebrating that they no longer have to team up with each other.
They're celebrating getting to be rid of each other forever.
Exactly. Like me and Kenny next week. And you know what's great about this, though, is they're in an American bar. A bunch of stupid Americans pick a fight with these guys. And it becomes an excellent barroom brawl. And I was telling my wife, I said, this isn't a proper barroom brawl until somebody breaks a glass bottle over somebody's head. And boom, right on cue, Sheamus did it. I am hook, line, and sinker for these guys now. This segment alone won me over on them on these two. I want to see these two team up for a while, have some great success. A little underrated part, Cesaro wanted a martini shaken, not stirred. I loved it.
Of course he did.
I loved it. And then it all culminated, of course, with Cesaro throwing a fucking fat guy through a fucking wall. How great. Oh, my God. Sandra, take it away.
Okay, this was so good, right? Like, first of all, you have Sheamus and Cesaro is an epic love story, right? Like, it didn't go on as long as the Golden Truth epic love story. And it's a very different type of epic love story than Breezango. But Sheamus and Cesaro feels like an epic love story to me. So the two of them meeting at the bar, gazing into each other's eyes and being like, fuck off, I hate you. You know that they still need to be together. David, you know that they're made for one another, because how good have they been together in the ring, right? So good.
Now I'm having flashbacks to all the great times Kenny and I have had.
I know, right? And that's
You know what? You may have bought him some time. You may have bought that McIntosh some time, because now I think we do need to get the band back together next week.
See, it just tugs at the heartstrings and makes you question your entire life. And that's what Sheamus and Cesaro are doing here with their very them appropriate drinks, right? This is important. Sheamus is drinking Guinness. Cesaro's drinking the martini. It's a very important prop decision for what happens later, because after the brawl, and oh, also shout out to Tessa Blanchard being in this scene, which was cool.
As a pretty lady. It was like a development who's who.
Yeah, it absolutely was. It was very cool to see. And so I love the bit where the guy goes through the wall and everything. Mr. Sondra did have a problem with it and made me promise that I would bring up he would have been more into this if the production would have been better, because there were very clearly like stage lights and the wall was super flimsy.
It was so obviously a fake wall.
Oh, obviously. And that's one of my favorite things about WWE backstage segments, when they take place in bars or restaurants or something like that, because... Like, one of my very favorite backstage segments is Daniel Bryan and Derek Bateman taking the Bellas on a date at this quote-unquote restaurant, which is very clearly a conference room with some tables.
Yes.
And I don't know, there's something about that I just love, but...
You know what we need, actually, Sandra? I think we need more of these pre-taped segments and less segments where people have microphones and they're standing in the fucking ring talking to each other.
I agree 100%. I mean, that doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. I know it's one of your least favorite things in wrestling, but I think that these backstage segments are so much more effective. Wasn't it way more effective when we went to Heath Slater's trailer and, you know, his wife fed them easy cheese and crackers and we were actually at the trailer than having all of his kids in the ring?
And it's so much more effective at telling a story.
Because the setting matters, and the setting is part of the story. And so them in this bar with the props, right? After this brawl, after these dumb Americans, you know, stupid Americans, right? Always just being so annoying.
Stupid idiots.
Oh, stupid idiots, all of us. After these Americans try and, like, pick a fight and cause trouble and wreak havoc and bring Sheamus and Cesaro back together as a team to take out these people who, you know, this isn't, like, foreign versus America. This is assholes versus two guys who are awesome at fighting. Picked a fight with the wrong guys, people in this bar, because Sheamus and Cesaro will absolutely kick your ass. And the best thing about it...
Unless you're Yoshitatsu.
Unless you're Yoshitatsu, that's real true.
Did you ever hear the Yoshitatsu?
Yeah, like the throwing the blender story.
So good, so good. Don't fuck with Yoshitatsu, Sheamus. You should know better.
Definitely do not. But my favorite thing is that after they've cleared the bar and Sheamus goes, open bar! And, you know, what do you have, Cesaro? What does Cesaro order? A pint of Guinness.
So good.
Because they're friends. My heart, David. My heart just, I just love it so much.
So it's just absolutely wonderful. I'll tell you what, though. The WWE roller coaster takes us to tremendous highs, like that Sheamus and Cesaro skit, and the lowest of lows, as Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens squared off in that aforementioned match for the championship title opportunity. And of course, these two had a long-winded match here. I thought it was an all right match. It was nothing to write home about, but it hit on all cylinders, I thought. The problem being that Kevin Owens, distraught after what happened to his best friend, Chris Jericho, at the hands of Seth Rollins, ended up losing to Roman Reigns, solidifying that a WWE Universal title match will happen at the pay-per-view. Sandra, did this break your heart seeing that Roman Reigns, the U.S. champion, is now the number one contender for the Universal title?
I can't get my heart broken when it's something that I know is going to happen. Because this was such a foregone
conclusion. I woke up November
conclusion.
9th pretty heartbroken.
I had a little more hope there than I had for Kevin Owens beating Roman Reigns here, to be fair.
You clearly don't understand how terrible this country is, Sandra. Oh, goodness. How do you feel about Roman Reigns as the number one contender?
I feel like I don't know why Roman Reigns needs to be the number one contender. I feel like we knew he was going to be the number one contender, if you've seen any roadblock ads. The thing with Roman Reigns, right, he's so miscast as a character that he is awful. Like, I've been spending this entire Raw rundown talking about how much of a dick Roman Reigns is, how much I hate Roman Reigns the guy. Not Joe Anuahi, but, like, Roman Reigns, absolute prick, can't stand
of
him.
Of course,
right?
Anytime we're talking about these characters, including, like, Mick Foley as a character, we're talking about their characters. We're not talking about their home lives.
Exactly. I had some people on Twitter get real fired up that I was talking smack about Roman Reigns, and I just want to make it clear.
He seems like a perfectly nice gentleman.
He seems like a lovely father and all of that and whatever, but like on TV, he's a prick, right?
Yeah,
let's just
right,
agree.
Right. The character of Roman Reigns is just abysmal, and in all honesty, we don't have enough time to start talking about how shitty of an idea it is that he is the number one contender, despite the fact that he's not even defending his U.S. title. So instead,
because he doesn't care about his U.S. title, Raw doesn't care about his U.S. title. The thing that kind of bugs me is just how clean and, I mean, I thought this match was good. I think I probably liked it more than you did. I really like Roman Reigns matches. That's my struggle with Roman Reigns, and I don't get to talk about it very often, which I'm kind of fine with because it's such a tired conversation.
It is a very tired conversation.
You know, like, I really like Roman Reigns matches. I think Roman Reigns is really good. Mr. Sandra and I disagree about this wholeheartedly. He thinks Roman Reigns is shit. I think Roman Reigns is really good. I think Roman Reigns is so dreadfully miscast.
I think the idea of Roman Reigns is fun because we have the same thing with Cena. Anytime Cena is in a big match, just like Roman Reigns, you're more interested in it because you know that The Office is behind them. So the stakes are a little bit higher. Will The Office go against its own interest and have Roman Reigns lose to this guy? Or will The Office go against their own interest and have John Cena lose to this guy? It always matters a little bit more in their matches because you get an inside peek of what The Office approves of. And that, as wrestling fans, people who listen to podcasts, people who record podcasts, it's something that we're interested in. It intrigues us. It is something that is dug deep down in the pit of our wrestling hearts. It is something that can easily draw a reaction out of us. So I think the idea, the illusion of Roman Reigns is better than Roman Reigns himself.
And if that's where I feel like I kind of disagree, because I just really like watching him wrestle. Mm. Like, a lot.
I like watching him wrestle, but again, I think it's because the stakes are always higher whenever he is wrestling. I don't think it's anything necessarily pertaining to him. It's the stigma which surrounds him. The aura of Roman Reigns is what I am more attracted to than the performer himself, which isn't a knock on the performer himself. He's fine, he's adequate, et cetera, et cetera. Just like John Cena. But the aura of that performer is the thing that draws me in. Either way, we are drawn in. But I'll tell you what I was more drawn in by than anything that Roman Reigns can do. I am, of course, talking about another pre-taped segment that was absolutely phenomenal. Up there with this Sheamus and Cesaro thing, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, of the serious shoot fighting spectrum. I am, of course, talking about Michael Cole's interview with a teary-eyed Paul Heyman, who had tears streaming from his face. My
God. His unshaven
God.
Face. He looked rough.
He looked terrible. Val goes, oh my God. And I look up for my phone and I just look at him and she goes, God, look at him. He looks awful. Looks like he hasn't slept in days. It was just pitch perfect. I love Paul Heyman. You love Paul Heyman.
I love Paul Heyman so much. He is one of my favorite humans.
Paul Heyman said it just with tears in his eyes. Not even just like holding back the tears. Tears streaming from his fucking face. And he just goes, we screwed up. Oh my God.
I love it. I love that they're not making excuses. I love that they're not shying away from it. I love that it's just, this did not go as we planned. We took Goldberg lightly. You know, it was a fucking video game, right?
Yeah. Like... Yeah, it was a fucking video game. Oh my God. What an excellent line. Heyman goes on to explain that they took Bill Goldberg lightly. They thought that it was just going to be a press release deal for the video game to give it a little bit of publicity. And in all honesty, that is what it was.
That's exactly what it was.
I love it whenever they blend reality with the fantasy. The fantasy warfare just got real. He mockingly said it. Like, oh, what a stupid fucking tagline. And we all thought that. He said what we're all thinking. I loved it. I loved every bit of this. I thought this was the best that Paul Heyman has been all year. I ate this up. Paul Heyman, whenever he is at his peak, just absolutely, utterly phenomenal. What was the line that he closed out with? He said that Brock Lesnar would be joining the Royal Rumble specifically to fight Bill Goldberg.
Yeah,
and there would be 28 losers, one winner, and one victim. Ooh!
And that victim will be Goldberg. And oh my goodness, am I so looking forward to seeing the two of them in the Royal Rumble. Like, Goldberg versus Lesnar is everything I should hate, right? And I talked about this with Kenny some, and I think it still baffles him how into Goldberg I am.
It's all he talks about behind closed doors at the ITR headquarters. He's like, even fucking Sandra likes it.
I know.
And I'm like, Kenny, put your wiener back in your jeans. You don't need to start jacking it over Goldberg. Oh, mate, he should come back. He should sign a year deal. I'm like, Kenny, we saw him for 90 seconds in the ring. We got to see him wrestle a little bit more than 90 seconds before he comes back for a year, buddy. But I'll tell you what, I want to see him back at Rumble. I want to see him back at WrestleMania. I want to see the rematch between Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania.
And what's I want smart to see about the person. Rumble, too, right? Goldberg's going to be protected again, being in the Royal Rumble.
He is.
And that's so smart. Again, like, accentuate strengths, hide weaknesses. We still aren't going to know by WrestleMania whether Bill Goldberg can do a proper singles one-on-one match. And you know what? I'm okay with that.
Because that lets
me look forward to it, right? And it keeps extending the excitement. And I really want to see it. And I, like, another thing that I really loved about this Paul Heyman promo, other than everything, right? Because the whole presentation, the seriousness of it, the authenticity of it. Authenticity is one of the things I hammer on, right? Like, because this felt authentic. This felt like when Michael Cole asked Paul Heyman, how does Brock Lesnar feel or how is he handling this? And Paul Heyman just goes, like, you care.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good because he's right, right? And, like, nobody's going to understand how Brock Lesnar feels about this. No one's going to understand the humiliation that Brock Lesnar is going through. This is basically, they're treating this as though Brock Lesnar would have lost to Mark Hunt at UFC, right? Like, what would have Brock Lesnar done? Well, we don't know because he beat Mark Hunt's ass. Like, he was so dominant. And this felt like a fight. And this was very specifically, they're really trying to evoke more of an MMA, like, surprise, anything can happen type of situation here. And it's really, really working for me a lot. And especially, like, Paul Heyman didn't try to make excuses, but saying that Brock had cracked ribs and if you can't breathe, you can't fight. And everything makes logical sense that he's saying. But my favorite thing about it is that he says that Lesnar's changed. He's never seen this Lesnar before. And Lesnar wanting to victimize Goldberg in this way, He's never had this much of an impetus to victimize someone, right? He's never had this kind of humiliation, even when he's lost to the likes of, you know, Triple H or John Cena or whatever. He's never had this type of a crushing. Brock Lesnar was squashed like a jobber in a squash match, right? That's got to piss Brock Lesnar off. And you know what Brock Lesnar is doing? He's reacting to a loss, and he's changing, and he's changing his behavior because of it, and he's making decisions based on being pissed off about losing. And one of my favorite things in wrestling and wrestling storytelling is reacting to loss and how you go from there. I love this, David. I love it so much.
It's absolutely perfect. And speaking of people who've been on a little bit of the losing side, it looks like the New Day are steadily approaching that tag team record held by Demolition. But man, oh man, they are barely holding on to it. I am so intrigued with the coming weeks of how the New Day is going to manage to sneak away with that title, with that record for the tag team titles. I love the idea of it. They faced the Club this week. They ended up getting a win with Xavier Woods ended up rolling up Carl Anderson, holding his tights after Carl Anderson tried to do it to him. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great. It was a new way of cheating and keeping their titles for yet another week. Sandra, do you think that the New Day are going to break that record?
Yes.
Do you want them to?
Sure. I just want it to be over.
That's perfectly fine. They're telling an interesting story for this with me. I'm intrigued by it. I'm interested as the weeks go. And honestly, I'm a little nervous. I think that they might do the old switcheroo, like right at the last second, and kind of pull the wool over everybody's eyes. I know Demolition's got that lawsuit against the WWE, and that's nothing to take lightly. But who knows with Vince? Vince is a weird, strange individual. He might do something entirely crazy just to swerve us. I honestly don't know, especially after seeing Cesaro and Sheamus reunite after this wonderful segment. But of course, now, Sandra, it's time for the main event. We're winding down here on the Raw Rundown. It's almost 1 a.m. here, you guys. We're a little bit sleepy.
It's almost 2 a.m. for me.
All of my heart pills are kicking in, you guys. They speed my heart down. Makes me real sleepy. But you know what doesn't make me sleepy? A wonderful women's title match.
In the main event of Raw. And this is why I wanted to get my negativity out of the way earlier on. And my saltiness over this match happening 6 days before TLC, where Nikki Bella and Carmella are going to have their no DQ match. Because I was real salty going into this match. But oh boy, do I not want to overshadow with a cloud of negativity how good this was. And how deserving of a main event spot this was. And how cool it is that women main eventing Raw is starting to become the norm.
That's what I was going to say. They didn't break any traditions or anything like that with this. And that is a good thing. This is starting to become a normal ordeal. We are, of course, talking about the restart from the match of earlier, of yesteryear, of yesterday, of yesterhour. Sasha Banks and Charlotte in the main event. Falls count anywhere for the Raw Women's Championship. This went all over the place. They went into the crowd. They went up the ramp. They did some amazing. There was an amazing moonsault spot with Charlotte taking out Sasha and nearly getting a 3 count. Looked phenomenal. Man, oh man, these women just tore the house down. I thought that this was one of their best matches that they've ever had. And it all culminated with Sasha Banks winning the title for a third time against Charlotte on Monday Night Raw tonight in Charlotte's hometown of Charlotte, North Carolina, by applying the bank statement on a guardrail.
It was so cool.
Leading up the stairs. Oh my God. I miss the crowd. I loved watching the people react right in front of them. There was this dude in back of Sasha, and he's just like, oh my God. Oh my God, this is nuts. If you can find the gif of it, go look for it. It's absolutely phenomenal. This was one of my favorite finishes of the year. Just absolutely a knockout of a match. Congratulations to Sasha. A lot of people are salty about this. They don't like the title switching hands back and forth. They are tired of seeing these two wrestle each other. Sandra, what do you have to say to those people?
I guess I can understand why some people would be critical, but I take the 100% complete opposite view. And I don't know how you feel about this, so I'm very curious to hear your thoughts. But I'll say that for me, them switching the titles back and forth like this makes it more intriguing for me. Because I really, really love the fact that they're so evenly matched. And I think that was part of the genius of this storytelling, right? Like, and that's part of the reason that I wish this hadn't happened 6 days before TLC, so that I was a little salty about overshadowing SmackDown and da-da-da-da-da. Because as an episode of Raw, and in terms of the storytelling that they told within this episode, I think it was perfectly done. Because Charlotte getting such a purposeful count out earlier on in the night, and it was so on purpose, you could tell, right? And commentary played it up too. They said Charlotte does not look sad about this double DQ because she keeps her title, and that would end the feud because this was Sasha's rematch. Sasha doesn't get another rematch after this. Charlotte could go on to be the queen and have her title, and Sasha's the one person who's been able to get to her, right? So of course she's going to want to take a double DQ. The genius of this, she can't do that in this match. So she has to go all out. And if you watch Charlotte in this match, I watched it back because I was like, it's so good. I needed to watch it back, right? Watch Charlotte's face the whole time. She is incredible at this. There's a reason I always say Charlotte is an incredible villain, and it's because she's an incredible villain and an incredible wrestler. The whole time during this match, she looks so desperate because she knows she can't cheat her way out of this. She knows that Dana can't necessarily come and help her out of this. She knows that there's nothing she can do to, like, be sneaky or, you know, use the tricks that she had planned on using to ensure her win in her hometown. Right? She doesn't have that out anymore, and she looks desperate because she knows that she can beat Sasha Banks because she has beaten Sasha Banks. But she also knows that Sasha Banks can beat her and that Sasha Banks might beat her, and that terrifies her to death. And you can see it in the match, and it's so compelling as a story. Just, I mean, out with all of the, you know, the greatness that was going on in the match. That in itself is a great story, right? Charlotte being that really incredible is. Of a villain. And then Sasha.
Also, Charlotte, the best villain on Monday Night Raw.
Absolutely, 100%, yes.
Male or female?
Absolutely. Charlotte is such an incredible villain that the crowd was fairly split here.
In fact, I would say that they were kind of leaning Sasha.
I'd say so too. And at the end, yeah. When they were in the crowd, that was a ballsy move. To end this in the crowd, in Charlotte, with Charlotte, right? Because they ran the risk of this crowd turning. You never know, right?
Well, like, let's touch on what happened after the title switch, of course.
Well, and Sasha had that promo, too. They did everything they could to ensure that Sasha was going to get cheered, right? Because they had that segment with Sasha and Bayley in the locker room that we didn't talk about. Where Sasha decides to dedicate her title win to Ric Flair. From Charlotte, North Carolina.
and of course, it all comes full circle. Because after the title victory, Ric Flair comes out to, of course, the most enormous pop on the planet in Flair country. Goes out to the ring and hugs Sasha, endorses her as the champion, while Charlotte bawls her eyes out.
And Sasha bawls her eyes out, and everyone bawls their eyes out, and I bawl my eyes out, and we're all crying, and it's all lovely. And this is what happens when these two have matches like this, right? They kill it. They kill it every single time. I'm always so emotional. So I understand. I think the original question was, you know, am I annoyed about the title switching back and forth? No, I'm not, because it's this prize that both of them want, and both of them are so capable of having, and on any given night, on Monday Night Raw, Sasha Banks could win that title. And on any given night on pay-per-view, Charlotte could win that title, right? So they're so evenly matched. And it makes the title feel more important to me, not less, because there are two incredible competitors trading this back and forth. And everything is so heightened and the matches are so good. And I just, like, it doesn't make sense to me that that would devalue a title. That makes it more important because they're willing to fight and willing to go through so much to get it back every time.
I liken it to two really good teams in a sports playoff going to seven games. That's what I would liken it to. because Charlotte gets a win, but then Sasha gets a win. Charlotte gets a win, Sasha gets a win. And they're so evenly matched that that is the story that's being told. Mm-hmm. To anyone who's tired of these two wrestling, fuck off. I watched Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels go out there and tear the house down every fucking night. There are dozens of matches between those two competitors. And these two women are the modern day equivalent. Sit back and fucking enjoy something. For once in your stupid, pathetic, useless, empty, void of purpose fucking existence. Just enjoy something. God, it's like they give you two of the greatest competitors of your lifetime, and they continually trot out there and put on five-star matches. And you motherfuckers want to whine about it?
I mean, God, I will say,
damn it!
In, you know, the people's defense, I will say I understand the want for variety.
People.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm not tired of it either, right? Like, just to get that clear. I understand the want for variety. I do. And I would definitely love to see Sasha Banks versus Nia Jax. I don't think
it will.
And I will. I know that I will. That's I would like to see more interplay.
You will. It doesn't mean that you're never going to see it, guys. If you want to see Bayley as champion, she's going to be. Just fucking wait a little while. It's a simple concept called fucking patience. Exude it for once in your stupid, meaningless, meandering existence.
You are really channeling Jim Cornette tonight. Wow.
Goddamn no good motherfuckers.
And I love it. And, you know, I agree on the patience standpoint. Like, I kind of wish that there were more women so that there could be more interplay, right? But I also see that, like, they had Bayley and Dana having a feud to kind of be a secondary feud here. And people complained about that, right? And Nia Jax and Alicia Fox had a story going on and people kind of complained about that. I mean, was it the best? No. But were they trying to tell concurrent stories? Yes, that's exactly what they were trying to do. They were trying to build a division as a whole. In my personal opinion, I do think it's unfortunate that Charlotte and Sasha are kind of heralded as, like, the only women capable of the title right now. I do. I wish that there were a more well-rounded division. I'm really, really fucking nervous about this whole Emelina situation because I think Emma can absolutely hang with them. And I would love to see her in title contention. And I don't know that Makeover Lady is going to be the character to do that, but I don't know. And I just want to get that out there. I don't know what's going to happen with Emma, Lena. So I don't want to shit on it before it happens because I don't know. And I want to be taken on a journey and maybe it's going to be the best thing in the entire world, right? Like back when Emma was my favorite person in the entire world and she was dancing and had the arms thing going on, if you would have told me Emma as a heel is a good idea, I would have been like, no, you're ridiculous. I will never like that. Heel evil Emma was like the best, right?
No, she was really good. She was.
Really good. And I would love to see Emma introduced into this situation. I think it's a shame everything that's gone down with Paige because I think Paige is entirely capable of hanging in that mix. I
no
doubt,
doubt
that she will, but she absolutely could, right? So absolutely. I wish that there were a more well-rounded women's division to give more stories and to give more interplay and whatnot. But in the meantime, there's just not. There just aren't that many women. Bayley's absolutely there. Bayley's absolutely capable. Bayley needs to be handled with care. I don't think they've been handling Bayley that well necessarily right. Because they've cooled her down so much. And I think that's really unfortunate. And I think that's partially the struggle.
She may have Sami Zayn syndrome if they don't watch their step.
And I really hope that we can get Bayley back to where she needs to be with a story like, you know, and I don't think Bayley versus Nia Jax is that story the way it is with Sami Zayn versus Braun Strowman. But I think we can get Bayley back. And I think that, I mean, the matches with Charlotte and Sasha, they're continuing the story. And I think that's one of the things I can say in their defense, too, is that every match feels like a progression lately, right? Like, they went to Hell in a Cell. That didn't necessarily make the most sense, but it did in terms of stepping up the feud and wanting to take things to a new level and also make history. I like that the feud is moving on from we're making history together and moving on to no, we fucking hate each other and we want to beat each other to death.
Yeah. I think that it is a wonderful culmination to their feud if this is the end, and a wonderful culmination to what I thought was a really good Raw. I think that you managed to sub in for Kenny on a excellent week. I would give this Monday Night Raw a 8 out of 10, which is my highest rating that I've given it in months. So congratulations, Sandra. You filled in on a good week.
I know, and I'm so glad about that.
Now, Sandra, I know you don't do ratings.
I don't do ratings.
That's not your shtick.
It's not my bag. That's not what I do. I don't like to.
However, Kenny has to give a rating for every week. And that no good motherfucker deserted me for Matt Hardy. He chose Matt Hardy as a new best friend. And you know what? He just made the list due to that. He made the David J. McCutcheon list.
You just made the list.
You just made the list. So I'll tell you what. Because of that, you have to assign a rating that Kenny would give this episode of Monday Night Raw. Sandra, what do you think Kenny would rate this Raw?
Kenny and I are such different wrestling fans that this is very difficult.
But, well, keep in mind there was a Golden Truth segment.
Well, it was, but
those
the thing
are
is,
his favorite wrestlers.
And there
was a Titus O'Neil segment too.
True. But I feel like the Titus O'Neil segment was short enough that you would forget about it because I forgot about it until you mentioned it. And also the Golden Truth segment was R-Truth getting squashed by Braun Strowman, who we all love. And Kenny loves to see R-Truth get the shit kicked out of him.
He does. He's racist.
Yeah, that's the reason. I think...
myself with my bronchitis.
Don't die. I have a very specific rule about this.
He's killing me.
The rule is don't die. I've had enough co-hosts die on me over the years. But as I was going through this with you, I thought maybe Kenny would give it an 8, and then you said 8, and so now I'm not sure. But you guys tend to agree a fair bit, right?
We do. We do.
So that's what was actually in my head before you said 8, was an 8.
That's good. Kenny gives this episode of
Kenny
Raw
gives this
eight.
Episode an 8, whether he wants to or not. That's the official decree.
Me and Kenny completely in agreement here once again. On the Raw Rundown, it has been an absolute pleasure to host this show and bring it to all of you guys. It has been an absolute pleasure to be with the one and only treasure, Sandra Ruth, Wessel Dick, Rhinestone Cowboy herself. Where can they find you on the Twitter machine?
Find me on Twitter at Sandra Ruth RW.
RW, as in Raw Wrap. I was going to go somewhere with this. Now I just got egg on my face, ladies and gentlemen.
You can pitch
me out for dropping the ball on that at Zoopsoul on the Twitter machine, on the Twitter, as Chris Jericho always says, ZOOPSOUL. We will be back tomorrow night. We are recording a SmackDown summary where I get to go on SmackDown, talk about James Ellsworth a bit, talk about AJ Styles, talk about how much I love Randy Orton and the Wyatt family. It's going to be a wonderful culmination of my love for SmackDown, which is infinitely better than Raw on most
weeks.
It is.
I'm so glad you agree. Like, I don't even have to play up this whole, like, Raw versus SmackDown rivalry. Like,
I will say, this week, kind of liked Raw a little bit more. But, man,
I haven't seen SmackDown, so don't tell me anything.
They were both stellar shows. That is all I will leave you with.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have been David J. McCutcheon. She has been Sandra. We will see you again tomorrow on the SmackDown summary. For the Raw Rundown, we will see you next time. Be nice to somebody that you've never met before. Go online, leave a comment on a Facebook thing that's positive. Do that. Go on a happy little puppy video, right? Instead of everybody going, you should stop abusing those puppies. They shouldn't be frolicking. Go, Ah, them some cute fucking puppies. How about that? Spread some positivity to the world, to those around you, to those around you digitally. Do it all over the place. We will see you next week, guys. Take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. We love you.
Bye.
Every day I'm on my way to that job like what? It's my destiny to be bigger, yeah, I got fight. And all that visions are sitting high on my own gold throne. Never listen to criticism, I built my